Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to our Action Research Podcast, created by the HEAR Lab team at the University of Houston. The HEAR Lab is the hub for engaged action research, and the mission of the lab is to build the capacity of scholars to create and disseminate collaborative, accessible, anti-racist research that centers community and fuels social change. Through hosting different activities such as walk and learns, webinars, or disseminating one-page research briefs, the team hopes to amplify research beyond articles and connect scholars to one another. Research should be done to create an impact, and by hosting this podcast, the hope is to have more awareness around anti-racist research approaches, as well as seeing how research goes beyond articles to connect to practice and policy. Today, we welcome Dr. Linda Marie Olson, who is an assistant professor at the University of Alabama. Dr. Olson's research focuses on intervening with at-risk youth to reduce their initial contact with the juvenile justice system and to limit their ongoing involvement in the system. Dr. Olson plans to incorporate neuroscience techniques such as neuroimaging and neurofeedback by researching them within the greater context of adolescent development, with the addition of biomarkers like stress hormones and behavioral markers such as treatment adherence. With that, Dr. Olson, let's have you briefly share with our listeners what your dissertation was about and what inspired it.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me, Anil. I'm excited to be here and get to talk with everyone about my dissertation research. So my dissertation looked at the effectiveness of neurofeedback in treating trauma symptomatology, as well as internalizing and externalizing behaviors of youth who were in residential treatment. And kind of what inspired this research was an internship that I had working at a lockdown residential facility for adolescent boys. And during that experience, just getting to talk with the youth, I finally made the connection of how much childhood trauma these kids had experienced that had really landed them where they were today in a juvenile setting. And so that really drew me then to thinking about, well, how do we look at the impacts on the brain that trauma has, and really try and target interventions that treat that and hopefully will lead to more lasting impact.
And when you say internal and external behaviors, can you talk me through that a little bit more?
Yeah, so internalizing behaviors being kind of more of our mental health conditions like depression or anxiety, whereas the externalizing behaviors, we're really looking at things like rule breaking or more delinquent behaviors such as acting out in the community or within their homes.
Okay, thank you for giving us that definition and really being able to help us understand. When you set it up, your dissertation, was there an intentional anti-racist or social justice lens considered?
Yeah, so I think, you know, in any residential facility, both when we think about the child welfare and juvenile justice systems, we know that there is just a myriad of disproportionality across all of those systems. And so one, I was very mindful of how that then influenced my sample, but then also how that influenced the conceptualization of my project as a whole. And so not only was I looking at a specific framework of criminology that was looking at how different behaviors lead to delinquency, but I also was using a healing-centered engagement framework, which really looks at the children not only as just these victims of trauma, but really survivors. And so trying to really hear their voices and have them be a part of the research project. And then beyond that, like not only intervening with them on an individual level, but then looking for like the root causes in the community that are really leading to trauma and victimization happening in the first place.
Where did you learn how to incorporate all of that? I think that's so important to take a step back, and you're talking about anti-racist approaches, or we're talking about social justice, but you talked about a couple other big terms. Can you go back and really clue us in on where you got that or how that came about?
Yeah, so I think, you know, in speaking with different mentors and Dr. Charles Lee, who was on my dissertation committee, and really had me think about how to reframe that work. And he's in this area as well doing research. And I think really also taking a step back and recognizing the positionality that I was bringing to my research as a white female, right? And coming into that space and into that residential treatment facility, like wanting to find ways to not only build trust and build collaboration with the partners that I was working with in the lab, but also the kids, right? Like, to me, it's so important that the kids' voices are heard, and I never want to be doing research just for the sake of doing research, right? And having other academics and scholars be reading it. And to me, I want it to get back to the kids and touch their lives. And so if they're not a part of the process, it didn't make sense, or it didn't really have significant meaning to me.
And you talk about having this impact on those kids that were part of the research. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and talk about that dissemination. You've already conducted the research, you've already completed it, you've presented. And let's talk about that dissemination before you talk about the results even. How are you making sure that you get the results you've gotten back to the community that it impacts?
Yeah. So I think one, right, in any academic setting or in finishing a graduate program, like getting publications out and doing presentations in academic settings is really important. But I'm also trying to ensure that I'm doing those presentations and giving that information back to the actual facility that I worked with. And so that's something that we're kind of partnering with their research and marketing team now. Like, how do we share these results with those families? How do we share them with potential families coming in, right? So not only, you know, speak to the results that we got, but also to hopefully encourage other families and children to be a part of the neuro lab services that are provided.
Awesome. Well, let's get into the nitty gritty a little bit then. When you talk about the neuro lab, when you talk about what was going on in your research, what did you find? Talk to us about the results.
Yeah. So part of what guides neurofeedback, or the kind of neurofeedback that I used, was doing QEEGs or brain maps of all of the youth in my study. And so just from a baseline level, many of the kids, right, in both the control and treatment group had extensive trauma that we could just see light up in their brains. And so then what I wanted to see was, is neurofeedback an effective treatment for those different types of trauma that the kids experienced? And what I found, so I used the trauma symptom checklist for children, and then used the youth self-report to measure internalizing and externalizing behaviors, and found that neurofeedback was more effective at treatment than usual, at treating a wide range of both those trauma symptoms and internalizing and externalizing behaviors. And then beyond treatment as usual, neurofeedback was more effective at treating sexual concerns, which I think speaks to kind of a really specific and nuanced impact that sexual abuse or sexual trauma has on the brain. And that's an area that I'm really interested in researching further.
Okay. You talk about a couple terms in there that I just want to make sure we clarify. You talk about neuroimaging and this brain map. What is a brain map? Could you give us a down low on that?
Yeah. So you use a specific like mapping system of the brain that corresponds to different areas of the brain and then different functioning. And so what a QEEG is looking at is how your brain waves are functioning in each of those areas. And each of those brain waves kind of corresponds to a pause. I'm going to pause there. Each brainwave corresponds to different functioning. So for example, our beta waves are often related to our focus or attention or our mood. And so oftentimes with kids who have experienced some sort of trauma, beta waves tend to be a little bit out of whack and can represent that fight or flight response. And so that is one thing in particular that we were looking at when seeing and analyzing these brains.
You also talked about two different measures. What were those measures and why did you pick those?
Yeah, so the trauma symptom checklist for children looks at different kinds of trauma symptoms that can present and then breaks it down into general trauma and then a specific scale for sexual concerns. And it's one of the most reliable and valid trauma measures that we have. I mean, it's also relatively short. And so wanted as much participation as I could get from these youth and also just from the staff members that were working with them. I didn't want it to be an additional burden on them to be able to help with this research. And then the youth self-report was a longer item, but really kind of captures a wide range of behaviors that children and youth can exhibit. And it really just felt like the best fit. It wasn't necessarily a direct mental health measure per se, but really just captured both the internalizing and externalizing piece of the research, and trauma points to both of those things as being a significant influence.
It's great to see that your research has been so intentional when you think about the individuals that are participating, the individuals that you're trying to say, hey, I don't want this questionnaire to be so long. I also don't want this to be a big burden on staff members or other individuals. They're going to be helping and be a part of the research process. So it's fantastic to see that you were so intentional about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important when we are entering a research space, right? To really be asking those questions, and especially when we're working with community partners, right? Our work should be mutually beneficial to them as well, right? It's a partnership. It's not about me coming in and doing this research and walking away with my results and, you know, taking advantage of the capacity and resources that they have, but it's about asking those questions on the front end of how can I come in and do this project, but also help y'all? Are there questions that you are looking for answers to? Are there things that I can put in the grant? And if I'm writing a grant for it, that would support you guys in doing your work and furthering your mission. And so I think, you know, asking yourself those questions from the very beginning and also asking the people you're partnering with is a really crucial part that can often be overlooked in research, but shouldn't.
Awesome. As you look back, now that you're on the other side and have completed the dissertation and graduated, what is something you wish you knew looking back?
I think one, to be like very flexible about timing. Right in the midst of this, COVID happened, something that was uncontrollable, but obviously was an important piece of how my timeline looked. And so I think recognizing and giving yourself grace in the process if things aren't going to go exactly the way that you plan them and you have to kind of adapt and go with the changes as they come. And I think just in general, right, like not shooting for perfection. A mentor once said to me throughout the program, like, the best dissertation is a done dissertation. And I oftentimes struggled with that because I wanted it to be quality work, right? Like, I wanted it to be a strong dissertation, a dissertation that was meaningful and would have impact. But at the end of the day, like, that's true, right? Like, we don't want work or our research to just be sitting on a shelf and causing this unending stress for years and years. Like, eventually, the best one is a done one, and that we get it out and we're able to share that work with the world, and knowing that this is just the beginning, right? The dissertation isn't the end all milestone. Of course, it gets us past the PhD, but now you have a whole future trajectory of work and research to continue with.
Absolutely. And I am hearing that. I'm hearing that from a couple individuals, right? A good dissertation is a done dissertation. And so I'm going to keep that in my head as I'm working on mine personally in this process. Even as the host and learning, growing from each presentation or each conversation that I'm having with individuals. Any last comments or thoughts that you want to share before we wrap it all up?
I just say rely on your mentors, rely on community members, and the people in your cohort. Right? These are people that are there to support you. One of the, you know, best things I did in my project and in my program was like all of those kind of dream people that you would want to talk to in your field or in your area, and shoot them an email and just ask if they would be willing to collaborate. I had one of the leading trauma researchers who I reached out to say, like, no, I wouldn't be able to help in a direct like mentorship role, but I'm more than happy to read your proposal. And he did. And he gave me a ton of feedback, and that really shaped the rest of my process. And so I would just say, don't be afraid to reach out to those people. And more often than not, they're willing to help you. And so enjoy the process, savor the process. This is like unique time that you won't get back again.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Olson. We really appreciate your time coming on the podcast and sharing your expertise. The HERE Lab team is here to connect with scholars and community to amplify voices in research. We look forward to connecting with listeners through their reflection and conversations. If you see public impact scholarship occurring in your community, tag us. Let us know. Stay in touch or share your thoughts by tagging us on Twitter at #GCSWHERELab. Rate our show, leave us a review, and subscribe so you can learn about all things HERE Lab and can cultivate change in research procedures, policy, and impact practice. This is your host, Anil Arora, signing off, living the dream.